Now, let me open up to discussion.
I think that it's really interesting that the times, especially when we're like teenagers, that we think that we're the most free, that people are actually just following the basest and most common of impulses.
I think it's interesting that I'm not sure we ever get past that.
Yeah.
We get really good at covering it up to ourselves and to other people. Sharon and I have noticed if we stop moving around, if we stay in the same place for 10 or 15 years, things start to sort themselves out. We get more control over things. Things settle down. It's kind of like what happens to you as you get older.
In terms of how we learn to conduct ourselves.
You get to be 30, 40. Things start to settle down. You've got a way of doing things. But how different are you really than you were when you were 16? In a way, unless we engage in serious spiritual effort, we remain teenagers inside, even though we become very adept at seeming more mature than we actually are. I have known lots of 65-year-old teenagers, and they're good at bluffing it and making it seem like that's the last thing they are, but it really is there. So I think it's something that we share in common with our children, which is very depressing. That's what I think makes it so depressing, to see the same things in our children that we know are still functional in ourselves. How are we going to raise these kids? We have the same problems that we see that they are beginning to have as they grow up. But it's true. When we're young, when we're teenagers, we are naive as far as how to go about trying to seem different than we actually are. It's obvious. It's obvious that that's what's going on.
So I would say it like this.
I think it's interesting that
throughout our lives, it is true that
We think that we're the most free, that people are actually just following the basest and most common of impulses.
Well, I was a teenager, but actually I think the first time one of the first times I really had that thought was when you said it, so it was a long time after I was a teenager. When you said something in the sermon, I said, oh, yes.
Well, we do remain ourselves. We do remain the same persons. We remain the same persons. And we have the same personality. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, personality is, we're stuck with whatever personality we've got. We've got to learn how to handle it, how to deal with it, how to make it into a positive type of thing. Like I know I always say about myself that I have tried, that I am stubborn. I am really, really stubborn. And I've tried to, well, not once in a while, not every day.
Kidding here.
But persistence, you know. So the stubbornness feeds persistence.
Note the fact that this is an example of those underground springs that John Climacus talks about.
Now, see what I mean about learning how to hide. Learning
how to
hide
it.
I'm stubborn.
Sometimes it's a good thing.
Sometimes it's a good thing.
Sometimes it causes you to get
right over the cliff.
Cellulitis in your
feet. That's true. Yes. On the treadmill. Yes. No pain is no pain, no gain. Not for me. And I was told that at the hospital. They told me, look, no pain, no gain, not for diabetics. Don't do that. You will kill yourself. So stubbornness. I try to make it work as patience. I would rather say it works better as persistence, probably. So we learn how to handle our personality and exploit your personality to good ends because you're stuck with it. You're stuck with who you are.
But that's not it.
What's not it? I don't know. I think it is. You know, part of character is learning how to guide your personality.
Is there someone living this life? The Christian life really doing it? I don't know. Besides the monk?
I don't know. I mean, most of the monasteries.
Just struggled less before.
That's the person you want to avoid.
Right.
The monastery, if you go to a monastery, you're going to a place where people are fighting for their lives.
Right.
And the idea that they're going to be people levitating out of their perfect perfection, probably not.
Probably not. It's going to look like they're praying a lot.
Well, they may be praying a lot. They may need to pray a lot. You know, you say, is there anyone who's actually living this life? Well, the point is that as soon as you start to
make the effort to be virtuous, you are already engaged actively in spiritual life.
Virtue is something that you do. If you do things that are virtuous, you are already doing that life. You're headed in that direction.
Somebody is not as hard as that.
Well, it's hard. I mean, you know, sure it's hard. It's like death. That's the hard thing to accept when we're young, when we're teenagers. is why does everything have to be so hard? Like one of our sons said to me about books that teachers give them to read. Why do they always end bad? There's always bad things happening. They're trying to teach them moral lessons. And all the books that get all of the prizes, the Caldecott medals and all that stuff, people are dying. People are going through bad stuff. And why does it have to be so hard? And there's a good moral at the end of it. And you learn something. Well, because that's the way life is. And you're trying to teach kids and young people. This is the way it is. So yeah, it is hard. But we do want to be what we are meant to be. Otherwise, why would there be any stories about tragedy that's overcome? That's the spiritual life. As far as the ascending heights sort of thing, when we get into that, we will find principles that we can apply to ourselves, like one of the first things, step one, turning our backs on the world. Now, the way we do that as Christians in the world is not going to be the same way among us. But we do have to do it. Why? Because we can't live the real, fully human life unless we do it. We can't be bound by our passions and desires and the world. That's true for everybody. And the first time that your pagan Confucian or Greek follows a virtue rather than taking advantage of their being stronger than somebody else and just taking what they have, they are already moving on that spiritual path. So there is that continuity. Is there anybody who's actually living this life? If there weren't anybody who was actually living this kind of way, things would be a lot worse than what they already are, believe it or not. There used to be an idea that there are a certain number of holy saints without whom the world would just implode. There's truth to that. And incidentally, the Confucians know about that. Confucius had that idea.
And all of us, I think, to some degree are living
in our own lives, if there were nothing virtuous about us, if there were nothing at all, what would be left of us?
I read one book one time. There's some phrase in church, everybody's saying that nobody can quit church. Everybody's saying, and there's nobody for quitting.
Oh, right.
Saved, yes. But nobody can clean the church.
We all have salvation, but the church is dirty.
Yeah.
Our church is usually pretty clean, though, so it must be somebody doing something good.
Yeah,
there are all those good things that are being done.
So I shouldn't say the Jesus prayer anymore?
No, I don't say you shouldn't. Have you read The Way of the Pilgrim? I wouldn't do it the way he does.
What's that?
Hundreds and hundreds of repetitions, so that it becomes a self-acting prayer, and your mind is the goal. Prayer within yourself. Prayer is praying you. You're not doing it. Well, that is the goal if you're going to live that kind of life. But if you're not dealing with some other more basic stuff, you may end up in a state of delusion.
More than I already am?
Or, yeah.
You say that that's probably above our spiritual endurance.
It is very traditional for pastors to advise people to restrict the number of times that the Jesus prayer is said. And even in The Way of the Pilgrim, the pilgrim is restricted by his starts as the number of, cut back, because, don't be quite so intense. And he has a spiritual guide, someone who knows God, someone who hasn't just read the books, read the Philokalia and the Ladder of Divine Ascent. And with our ego, we enter into that spiritual discipline. What are the chances that we're not going to have trouble? We are going to have trouble.
Most of us can't even handle Lent.
You certainly should never begin it alone. And if your pastor, your priest tells you, don't do it, you better not do it. Sometimes it's about all you're going to get out of the pastor. I've been waiting. I have had the Philokalia in the back of my mind since I first converted to Orthodoxy. But so far, I have not been so foolish as to think that that is my calling. I am here because this is my calling. It's not self-chosen. Now, if I had chosen myself, I probably would be doing that.
Reading,
trying to attain perfection by way of a solitary life. That would have appealed to me, but at the same time, fortunately, I was close enough to the reality of what I actually was all about that it did scare the hell out of me.
Plus, you were already married.
Well, no, it's not like you can't live that life and be married. No, you can. That's not a restriction. Well, you can be married.
I thought you were talking about going off by yourself and then
Oh, but you can do that anywhere. You don't have to go out physically by yourself. Anthony of Egypt traditionally always said that there was a man in Constantinople that he knew of who was his equal. And in the midst of a busy business life, of course, we don't know who that was. But the idea that we cannot do that spiritual life unless we are monks is definitely not the case. But trying to do it as monks do it, trying to take the Philokalia, for example, and use it as a manual without applying it and having help to apply it to the actual realities of our lives as we live them, is spiritually dangerous. Okay, any other thoughts, comments? Yes?
Character and personality. What is changeable? Well, we can change character, or we can change personality.
You can change your character. You can change your character.
Personality,
you can submit to being spiritually governed and directed. We all are somebody in particular. We all are created in order to reveal God in a unique way. And our personality is going to be part of that. But if we follow personality traits in a bad way, use our personality to do things that are not good, John Edwards comes to mind. Fantastic personality, and he is a rotter.
Personality is from our soul. Soul from God, personality from soul.
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to try to diagram it like that. Is your personality part of your soul? It seems to me it is.
And character is something what you do.
Yes, virtue is something you do. And everybody agrees on that. I think everybody agrees on that. The Confucians, the Chinese, the Greeks, the Romans, Go, Father Tom, we all agree on that. Virtue is something you do. And we can do those things. We can do virtuous things.
But vice is also something that we do. And our moral choices do have consequences to our souls and also in the world. As moral agents, we can bring more evil into the world by our choices and actions. That's important.
Another personality comes to mind. George Clooney. I did not like him at first. Man was getting along on his personality, but he uses his personality to do good things. When George Clooney goes to Africa and says, look here, look at this, people go and they look at this. So he's using his personality for a good purpose. And that shows good character. And he's using his personality to accomplish that. And that's what personality should be used for. To fulfill capacities that God gives us in such a way that it accomplishes good and virtuous things.